Today we begin this series. It's called Risk, and the tagline for it is Love Boldly and Magnify Jesus. So we do pray that our hearts would be open to this, and that not only would we be hearers of whatever we hear today, but that we would be able to pull something, and that we would be doers as well. So love boldly, magnify Jesus. So a little bit of foundation for this series. And actually, let me share, first of all, these are going to be the different weeks and the different topics for the weeks to come. So just so you have a little bit of a heads up, today we're going to talk about forgiveness, next week about generosity, third week about having being risky enough to just do it, and there's a wide array of things that we're speaking about there, fourth week about praying, fifth week eating and talking. And then the final one is patience. So risk involved in all of those. So I hope that the topics on there really hit home to where we are. And I trust that they will. So those are the coming weeks. I wanted to give you a heads up. So today, again, risk to forgive. I want to lay down a little bit of a foundation first of what we're talking about. When we speak specifically about risk. And there are a couple of realities about risk, and one of them is that it's inescapable. Like, there is nothing we can do in this life that doesn't have an element of risk. You getting in your car and driving here this morning, or on your bike or walking here, there's an element of risk in that. But you having taken somebody to the airport this morning and they're getting on a plane to go and fly, there's an element of risk in that. And many times I think we want to avoid the risk. I mean, just as humans, I think it's in our nature to try and protect, right? Not a bad thing. But as we go through this series, I want to try and weave how risk can be very good in some ways. Not foolish risk. I'm going to walk on the ledge of the Chase Tower just because I want to be risky. But a risk where, namely, it's motivated by love. And many times we try to insulate ourselves from risk because risk implies what? A possible loss, right? A possible failure, right? If I give of A, B, or C, then what is my return on the investment? And hence, we're risking many things. But I want to try to carefully destroy the illusion of security. Like, you could, if you wanted to, live in a bubble at home and not want to put yourself at any risk of anything. And if you were literally living in a bubble, you could breathe in the wrong thing and it could potentially kill you. Like, I'm going to that extent because I want to try to destroy, like I said, the myth of security, 100% security. So if it's a myth, then maybe in a way when we're speaking about doing life the way Jesus wants us to do life, which he is our plumb line, then maybe he designed life in a way where he wants us to risk for the sake of his name, love being the catalyst. So when we don't risk, we get paralyzed. And that can apply in many things. Today we're going to speak about forgiveness specifically. But when we don't want to pull the trigger and take that next step because we don't know what's on the other side, then it serves no one. Does that make sense? Like, if we're paralyzed in fear or not wanting to risk our reputation or our heart or our feelings or what we've got in our bank account, you know, the spectrum is huge, right? If we live a life like that, then we're not setting anybody up to be a recipient of some kind of blessing that could happen through us risking. So I want to try to get to the point to where we understand and believe that risk is right. That when we allow the catalyst in our heart to be love, and that love is the one that pushes and motivates, that it's good and right to risk. It's good to trust that by giving of the here and now, something can happen over here. That what happened to you, that that could be a seed that was planted, and in that moment, there might have been a risk for this other individual. That what you did in spending and investing time in organizing and gathering and texting and then presenting to, that there was maybe some form of risk. What if no high five? What if no recognition? What if I don't like that style? There is a range of different risks that we take. What if I need so-and-so to come and help me move and they say, no, I'm busy? Then there is a risk of rejection, right? I would contend, though, that risk is right when our hearts are motivated by love. So as we go through this series, I want for us to try to, bit by bit, breath by breath, get a little bit more familiar with risk and being okay and trusting in future grace. What is that? That something can come from letting go of the here and now. So there is an author, a theologian by the name of Bonhoeffer, a German guy who was anti-Nazi regime. He was a catalyst in trying to remove Hitler from power because he was not okay with what Hitler was doing to the world. And Bonhoeffer stepped up, and the quote that I have on the screen by him is basically him saying, it is better to risk than to sit down and wait until somebody else pulls the trigger. He actually says that risk is worth even failing, when on the other side is, I'm just going to let somebody else solve this, or I'll just wait until it all crumbles, and then we weep over what has happened. It takes guts. It takes risk. It takes faith to risk. And this is a guy who was eventually murdered, hung by the Nazi regime. But he did everything in his power to push against the evil in the world. This is a quote. It says, to delay or fail to make decisions out of fear to fail may be more detrimental than to make a wrong decision rooted in love and faith. Don't miss this part, please. What's a catalyst? I'm going to risk because I'm going to trust that this could actually make a difference. There is the possibility to fail anytime we risk, anytime we take a gamble, anytime we introduce ourselves to another person, anytime we walk into a new situation, there's a possibility of risk. But what if trusting that the foundation of love and faith could lead to something beautiful? So, Our verse for this morning, speaking about forgiveness, if you are a note taker, then I would invite you to write this down and read it on your own time as well, that you would eat of this bread more than what happens here on Sunday morning, that you would have opportunities during the week to do this as well. So Ephesians chapter 4, verses 32, and then we jump over to chapter 5, verse 1, 2. The author says, be kind and loving to each other. Chew on that just for a moment. It says, be kind and loving to each other. It means put others before yourself. It means think of them and react in a tender, sweet nature, disposition. And then here we go for our application for today. He says that we should forgive, that we should forgive each other. Why should we forgive each other? Because God has forgiven us through Christ. And then he gives us a very in-your-face example, and he says, if we call ourselves children of God, then we should also imitate and do as God does, right? So my kids do things that I do without me even teaching them to do things, right? Like they pick up like weird quirks. Like apparently I sometimes speak with my hands and sometimes I point my finger. So my 8-year-old son the other day said, hey, Dad, he opened up the fridge and we were about to have dinner. And he said, hey, Dad, can I grab a Stella for you? And I kind of freaked out for a moment for many reasons. But what caught me the most is that he had like a little movement. He said, can I get you a Stella? And I'm thinking, whoa. So first of all, I'm thinking, what are we doing to this 8-year-old kid? But he picked up this quirk, this thing that I do often, and he did it exactly as I did. And my wife stopped and pointed out, and she said, did you see that? And our daughter does things similar to that as well. Like things that they say and mannerisms that they have. And my story is not to point at my kids or at my family or anything like that, but the story and the point that I want to relate to is that if we've been forgiven by the work of Christ on the cross, and if God is our Father, then we should imitate and be like our Father, right? So how do we do this? How do we forgive? Here, let's kind of break down what forgiveness is, first of all. Before I get there, maybe, let me do this. We've all been hurt, right? Like we're hurt right now. Perhaps we've been hurt by parents, by coworkers and bosses, maybe by neighbors or landlords, by other family members, by folks who we thought that had our back, right? And for some of us, there are some deep wounds that are still open. And I want to be sensitive to that this morning. There is deep pain in our lives in many ways. So I want to validate that, but I also want to put truth on the table, if you will, that I believe can refresh us when we run to that well of truth. And if we're hearers and doers, and perhaps there's an action step for all of us here this morning. So here's what forgiveness is. Fighting the urge to get revenge. Whatever kind of revenge. Revenge doesn't have to be putting a paper sack on their door and lighting it on fire, right? There are many things. Sometimes revenge is not a tangible revenge. Some of the scariest revenge is in our heart and in our minds, right? So one element of being able to understand what forgiveness is resisting the urge for you to have some kind of payback because of what's been done to us. Another one is to pray for them, to literally think of the hurt that's been caused to us and to stop and say, Jesus, will you bless them? One of the Mount Everest of our development of human beings, I would say, is to offer forgiveness. Because our human nature, our default is I'm right, they wrong me, let them come to me. And guess how much good that does us? Zero. Because we carry around that baggage and that pain, and it just gets heavier and heavier. And then that baggage and that pain, according to the author of Hebrews, says that it starts to grow a root in our heart. And it develops a root of bitterness. I've been there many times when I choose to not let go of the pain that's been caused to me. And that bitterness has an effect on everybody around me. Because I think thoughts about this person, just like fire comes out of my mouth. Thoughts are horrible. But when we start to pray for those people and we ask step by step and breath by breath that God would bless them, it almost starts to peel away a layer of hardening in our hearts. God bless them. God help me forgive them. It's tough. It's hard. It's been years. And the layers of hardening had just gotten thicker and thicker. And I didn't deserve what happened. I'm sorry, you might be right. And I didn't bring this upon myself, and I got the end of this. I apologize. But we're empowered to do something about that. Not out of our own strength, but we come step by step, breath by breath, to this person who we call Jesus, and we see that he has forgiven the inexcusable in us, and that that would be the catalyst for us to do the same for others, so we can grow in maturity like our Father in heaven, right? And then we seek reconciliation. Like, not just sit back and say, all right, no revenge. I really hope that nothing falls on their head. I've already blessed them. That's good. But you take a step further, like a tangible step. Maybe you send them a text and you're like, I forgive you. And the weight comes off of your shoulder. Easy to do? No. Try to do it on yourself. You're going to fall on your face and fail. Do it with the power that Jesus has left for us, which is the power of the Holy Spirit. He says, I'm leaving, but I'm going to leave somebody with you. And that's the Holy Spirit, John chapter 14. I can't do it on my own. The bitterness and the root of all that pain is deep now. Now it's produced all these other fruits of hate and vengeance and anger and rumors and talking bad about them behind their back. And just, I prefer never to connect with them. Right? Anybody been there? I have. But when we realize and we take that step, then you do as far as you can. It's not your job to get them to understand or agree. You let go of the sack of pain and rocks and bitterness that you've got. You just drop it. You're freed up. You can start to breathe a little bit easier. So here's some personal application for us. We remember how loved we are by Jesus. This point of application will only mean something to us if we understand how broken we are. Does that make sense? Like, if we think that we're kind of okay and not that bad, but our plumb line to who we compare ourselves to are people in our lives, then we'll say, I'm not as bad as so-and-so. I have more money in my savings account than so-and-so, and I've achieved more degrees than so-and-so, and I don't hate, and I have not caused that much pain to so-and-so. So when our gauge and our plumb line to measure ourselves become other people, then of course we will feel good about ourselves, because we rarely compare ourselves to somebody who's better than us, right? Like, we pick somebody low on the totem pole, and we're like, look at that piece of trash. Of course I'm better. We don't say it, though, because we'll be humble, right? Like, I can run faster than my 8-year-old son. I can beat that guy. Tie my leg to a cinder block and I can beat him. That's easy to make that comparison. I can't beat this Bolt guy. What's the name? Usain Bolt? I can't beat him. Why don't I use him as my plumb line? Because it doesn't feel that good anymore. Here's my point. When we compare ourselves to others, we won't understand how forgiven we've been and how much we need to be forgiven. The plumb line is Jesus Christ, perfection, perfect love. When we compare ourselves to that reality, it should stir our hearts to say, whoa, why would he die for me? Why would he excuse the inexcusable on me? That's our plumb line. And it's way up here. And I communicate in a tender and loving way that there is no way that we can reach that plumb line. And that's the beauty of the story of Jesus, though. It says it's unobtainable. However, I'm the one who's come down so you can meet me at that plumb line because of what I did on the cross. Then that stirs our heart, because we are a recipient of something that we did not earn and don't deserve. Does that make sense? I don't deserve that gift. What kind of love does he have for us? Jeremiah 31:3 says it's an everlasting love. An everlasting love that does this, it pursues us in our junk. When we're rejecting him, saying, no, not today, don't need you, I got this on my own. And when we've done that in our lives, I have many times, day after day, for seasons, don't need you, I got it covered. He's still pursuing me. He's saying, you're my boy, and I love you. And I proved it in a tangible way, not just by words. How did I prove it? Look at the cross, Poyo. There is no love here on earth that we will experience that is like him. I love my wife deeply, and we've been together for 12 years, and we have two awesome kids, one whom I can beat running faster. However, if I wake up tomorrow and I am in a season of her hating me and rejecting me, I'm going to get to a point in my human nature that I'm going to say, I don't want any more of this. Don't miss that, please. Christ is not human. Christ is the Son of God who says, in your rejection, you see what I ask you to do. This is how I want you to do life. And as you constantly push against me and say, not your way, my way, because my way feels better, he still says, still my girl. Do we see the pursuing, everlasting, nothing separates us from his love kind of God that we have? That's how good he is. It should blow our minds. Why does he love me? I'm a jerk. He chose me. He chose you. And it's not contingent upon what we offer him. It's contingent upon his love and his covenant for us. That's how he describes his love, a covenantal love. Cannot be broken. We have a hard time understanding that because we live in a society where covenants are broken like that. Not work for me anymore. See ya. Don't like the seats on this leather car anymore. Not paying for it anymore. There's a crack in my apartment. See ya. Have a 2-year commitment to be at the job. See ya. Don't like the boss and his ties. It's hard to get the word covenant, but I'm trying to put it on the spectrum of what he has done for us. My love for you is covenantal. Nothing breaks it. While you reject me, I run towards you. That's beauty. That's what stirs our heart. What should stir our heart. I don't deserve it. Why me? And he gently whispers and he says, because you're my boy and I know you. And I'm working in you, breath by breath, step by step. And I have you here today because I want you to hear that. Don't even do anything with it. Just let it sink into your heart. I love you. In all of the hurt and pain and mess, I love you. I have sealed you, Ephesians chapter 1, verse 13. I have sealed you with my Holy Spirit, and that seal is unbreakable. It's an everlasting love. So when we understand how well we've been loved, how deep He loves us, then we can take a risk to forgive those who have wronged us. Then we can take a risk to see how our Father is, and that we would trust that He gives us the strength and the power we need to do as He has done. Easy to do? No. Get with a friend or two. Weep a little bit or a lot. Say, hey, here's how I feel, and here's a pain that I've been carrying around for months or years. Will you hold my hand? Don't tell me anything. Just hold my hand. I don't need your advice. If I need advice, I can go to Barnes & Noble and pick up a 7 Steps to Forgiveness plan. Doesn't work very well if we don't get that the catalyst to us forgiving is that we have already been forgiven. C.S. Lewis says that to be a child of God is to forgive the inexcusable, because we have been forgiven for the inexcusable. I want to be like my daddy. I can't, and I don't know how, but I see that He forgives me day in, day out. Brand new slate. He forgives all my junk as far as the east is from the west. It's white as snow. It was scarlet red, no more. All of my sin, all of my anger and pride, my ego, my lust, my selfishness, my lack of patience, my inability to love others the way that I should love others, putting them before me always. He's like, I got your back, Poyo. Just trust me. Trust me. So today I invite us to trust Him. Just breathe in a little bit. There are no spiritual champs in this room. That includes me. They don't exist. There is one spiritual champ. His name is Jesus, and He has set the example for us. And if in all of our lack and failure and mess ups and inabilities, He says, I'm for you. I reject you not. You believe, you don't believe, you have questions, you have fears, you have doubts, you have anxieties. He says, you're welcome. You're welcome into my area. That's the good news about all this. The good news is that there is no application for us to fill out and then wait to see if He approves or not. With all of our brokenness, He says, I reject you not. Not only is it, I reject you not, but He's actively pursuing and saying, I want to be with you, I want to be with you. I'm not inviting you to a religion. I'm not inviting you to agree with my theological interpretation. That's not what love in motion is about. I'm inviting you to believe in the relationship that Jesus Christ wants with us. Son to Father, Father to daughter, I'm pursuing you because I love you. Jesus, give us the strength to believe. Open and equip our hearts to be able to forgive as we have been forgiven. And give us the faith to risk and trust that you are at work. In your name, amen.